Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA. We inform you that any federal tax, state tax, financial advice, or information contained in this communication is not intended to be personalized or specific in nature, or to be relied upon for your personal situation in any circumstance. The advice and information are not intended and cannot be used as a tax opinion letter, nor used for the purpose of avoiding tax-related penalties. For personalized advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. I'm a CPA, CFP, and AEP on the web at yourfinancialchoices.com. You can listen online each and every week at wdiy.org. You can stream live with us or tap into podcasts from prior shows there. Just go on wdiy.org, look for local programming, scroll down to Your Financial Choices, and peruse the topics that are available. Today is October 18th, 2017. The markets were up today. The Dow closing at 23,157, the NASDAQ at 6624, and the S&P at 2561. Our topic tonight discusses misconceptions and what you don't know, you don't know. We are live tonight. We'll take your questions. In fact, I'd love questions tonight. I would love questions or even comments about any misconceptions that you may have experienced. You know, when we talk about financial choices and being proactive and not reactive, sometimes what we don't know has caused us to make decisions that come back to bite us. We had a misconception about something and boom, we didn't know. And boy, were we caught with our pants down, so to speak. So if you were had any experiences with that, you're welcome to share. If you have questions, again, they don't have to be about this topic in particular. If you just have general questions, I'm happy to take your calls. We are live. Lori C's in the studio with us, and she'll answer your call, take your information. We ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay, and we could talk without confusion. Again, we do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. You can talk live on air with me, or if you're not comfortable talking live, you can just give your question to Lori and she'll write it down and bring it into the studio. Or if you just have a story you want to share, she could, you know, maybe write down that as well. But I'm happy to hear those stories. Well, so I'll take your calls and try my best to answer your questions. Phone number is 610-758-8810. And for regular listeners, you might as well just, you know, jot that down. It's nice to have that available if you've ever needed. 610-758-8810. Email is also available at yourfinancialchoices.com. So in general, what I thought I might try to do is hit on some of the misconceptions, just a few, and I'm just kind of high level, a couple things that just popped, you know, came off the top of my head around the areas of our financial planning life. So, you know, around cash flow, taxes, investment, risk management, retirement, and estate planning. Where are some of those misconceptions? And interestingly, maybe it's because it's my favorite area, estate planning, but that's where I saw in a lot of misconceptions and where I have seen a lot of misconceptions. And you know, I just like people to be informed. I think if you're informed and have the knowledge, you're able to make better decisions and choices in your financial lives. So around cash flow, I want to talk a little bit about Medicare versus Medicaid, transferring assets. Again, cash flow, young people, how are they investing? Taxes, talking about conversions from IRAs to Roths. Notices from the IRS, investments, talking about markets. When markets go down, your portfolio goes down. Differences between gains in your portfolio, realized and unrealized. Risk management, touch base on, you know, homeowners insurance, life insurance, retirement accounts, maximizing your 401k, estate planning, surviving spouses, steps up in basis, naming the estate as a beneficiary, inheriting assets. So these are kind of the quick top of my head misconceptions that I want to talk about tonight. So again, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. So let's start with cash flow. And the reason I put Medicare under cash flow is because usually when we're talking about Medicare, we're talking about people who are 65 and older. A lot of times people confuse Medicare with Medicaid. And when we think of cash flow, one of the biggest crimps in our cash flow when we're older is nursing care cost or assisted living cost. It takes a real toll on our cash flow. And I want people to understand the differences when we're talking about elder planning or Medicaid planning or Medicare. People get them confused. So our Medicare, sometimes people think, Medicare will pay for nursing home costs. This is a misconception. So I have an article that I pulled off of Forbes, and I think it was from 2014, but I felt like it kind of gave some general understandable language about it. And it was written by Mark Eghari, and it was called The Medicaid Lookback Period Explained. But it started with Medicaid is different than Medicare. And people sometimes think it's the same thing. And I often spend time trying to explain to people the difference. Medicare, in the article, and I want to give him credit for this, Medicare is an entitlement program paid for through payroll withholding. So for those people who are still working, you look at your pay stub and you see some of these taxes that are coming out. You see federal withholding, state withholding, local withholding, and then you might see OASDI and FICA. So there's different pieces of what we might call the Social Security tax. It's basically 7.65%, and we have 6.2% of it going to Social Security up to a certain cap, and 1.45% of it is going to this Medicare. It is for hospital insurance. When we get older, we turn 65, we qualify for Medicare. That's the hospital insurance piece of it. Medicaid is a form of social welfare, and it's designed to help people in need. Medicaid is administered by each state and sometimes by each county within a state, which means the rules and benefits can and do often vary. Generally speaking, Medicaid is designed to pay for long-term care once the individual's funds and assets are extinguished. So here is the misconception. People think Medicare is paying for nursing care when, in fact, that is not what that is for. Medicaid may pay for nursing care when you have the need, people in need, when your individual funds and assets are gone. In the article, he gives an example. If you have $200,000 in savings, you're expected to use those savings to pay for your care. Once your savings are gone, then Medicaid will kick in. Article goes on to say, when you apply for Medicaid, any gifts or transfers of assets made within 5 years of the date of application are subject to penalties. What am I talking about there? Sometimes people get this idea in their head like, oh, I don't want all my assets to have to go to the nursing home, so I'm going to transfer them out of my name, and then the nursing home won't be able to come back after me. That's a misconception again. Medicare can come back and look back 5 years to see what assets you've transferred out of your name. It's called the look-back period, and right now it's a five-year look-back. It's 60 months from the date of the application, and if they find that there were transfers made in that five-year period, when they talk about what the penalty might be, it's a penalty of how much time they're not going to pay for your nursing care, and I'll explain that a little bit when we come back from our next break. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. We're talking about misconceptions tonight. If you have questions, give us a call live on air or off air, whatever you're more comfortable with. We will be back in just a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Hi, this is Wagner Previato, Executive Director at WDIY. On behalf of the Board of Directors, volunteers, and staff, I want to thank everyone who helped make our Fall Pledge Drive a success. We couldn't be here without you. Again, thank you for supporting WDIY 88.1 FM, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. We're talking about misconceptions tonight, and you don't know what you don't know. And I want to also put out there that even people in the industry, financial services, and even probably any field, we do, from time to time, run across things we don't know. So it's great to rely on professionals, and we make it our calling to kind of explore and be aware of all of the rules that are out there. But in today's day, with changing rules, changing laws, technology, everything just kind of going so fast and changing, sometimes we can't always keep up with everything. So from my perspective, the more we educate listeners, the more you're asking questions, the better informed you are, the better informed we are, and it's kind of a two-way street. In fact, I learn a lot from the listeners who call in with questions or have comments. And in fact, if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810, and you can talk live on air with me or off air. Just give your question to Lori C. She'll bring it in to the studio, 610-758-8810. So one of the misconceptions we started with is the confusion of people thinking or confusing Medicare and Medicaid. Medicare is, health insurance program at 65 or people who may be disabled. Medicaid is a social program, and Medicare does not cover nursing home care, whereas if you're have no financial means and you have a need, Medicaid might cover, just because there might be circumstances I'm not aware of, potentially could cover your nursing care needs if there's a need. So many people try to avoid losing assets to nursing homes, and they get fancy with doing planning. I've seen that backfire a number of times, so you have to be very careful what you're doing. Planning, it's more of a long-term planning option. If someone gets sick and goes into a nursing home today, it's a little hard to plan around protecting assets at that point. So be careful of that. But if someone has transferred assets trying to avoid the nursing home taking them, and they want to qualify for Medicaid on a need basis, Medicaid can look back 5 years. Medicaid can look back, the Department of Welfare can look back 5 years to see if there were any gifts made. And then they basically come up with what is deemed to be a penalty. And it depends on the state. There's a factor they use that says here's the daily rate or here's a monthly amount. And in, I'll give you an example. Let's pretend it's you went into a nursing home, they look back 5 years and they see that you transferred $30,000 to your kids in that past 5 years. And in Pennsylvania, they use a daily divisor, and it's $321.95 a day. So they would take $30,000 divided by $321.95 and come up with 93 days. So that is the penalty. It's 93 days, I believe, of not covering the nursing home care expenses. You wouldn't be eligible for that 93-day period, or they come back for it. I'm not exactly sure all the mechanics of that. I have not had someone in that situation, but that's basically what they do. So when someone passes away, you have to get clearance from the Department of Welfare as to whether or not they may have a claim against assets in the estate. Remember, though, if it's transfers that were made longer than 5 years ago, those don't come back into that calculation. So the look-back period is 5 years from the date of application for Medicaid benefits. All right? So some hopefully clarification on the differences between Medicare and Medicaid and transferring assets and being careful of that. Young people. Let's talk about young people for a moment when we talk about cash flow. I would say the misconception here that we might run into is they have plenty of time to save money. Plenty of time. And they might have time, but what does that mean for them in the long term? And another advisor had given me this idea, and I thought, you know what? This is a very interesting example and misconception about having plenty of time. One of the things that I learned in college in economics was microeconomics was that the value of compounding, and people tend to spend what they make. So if you spend what you make, the economics of that is you spend what you make, you never have enough to save. And if you don't save, then you will be losing out on the benefit of compounding. What is compounding? Well, that little piece of money that you've earned, you invest it in some way, hopefully depending on your time frame, how long you expect to have when you're going to need that money, your risk tolerance, can you sleep at night if it's invested somehow in the market? You hope to invest that money and that money starts working for you. And it's really, if you look at it as you work so hard, you go to work every day, you work 40 hours a week or 50 hours a week or 60 hours a week, you're working so hard and you have to, you know, it's your blood, sweat, and tears, and stress, and your health, and all of that, and you're working and working. Well, if you think about it, how else can you work better? Well, you can work better by paying attention to your finances, figuring out a way to save money, and when you start saving money, you're taking a little of the pressure off yourself from working so hard, because now you're going to let that money work for you. When you're young, before you get in the habit of that natural economics of we tend to spend what we have, start and be very disciplined at a young age where you just kind of get in the habit of saving 10%. And let me tell you, folks, we all know this once we're old. We do not know this when we're young, because I know people told me to do this and I didn't. So it's how we must have to explain it to the kids. So let me give you an example. If I took $5,000 today, nothing else, I just took $5,000 today and put it in an account and pretend I'm 20. I'm 20 years old. I put $5,000 in an account and I said, I'm not going to touch this for 40 years. If I invested in it and got an average rate of return of 5%, that, and I'm not factoring in taxes or anything like that. Let's pretend it's in a Roth IRA, because as Lori C. knows, I have to mention Roth IRA every week. Let's pretend as a 20-year-old, we made $5,000 of earned income. We put $5,000 into a Roth IRA. We saved it for 40 years at 5%. That would be worth $36,792. And all I did was put $5,000 away today and invested it at this average rate of return, I would have $36,792 in 40 years. Well, we might think, well, you know, time value of money and all that, Lori, big deal. And in 40 years, that, you know, it's going to buy a loaf of bread or something. Well, folks, that's not the point here. The point is that's worth $36,792. I put in $5,000. We still know in 40 years, that's money that I'm going to need. If I had only done it for 30 years, so instead of my 20-year-old self doing this, I waited 10 years. I'm going to do it when I'm 30. At 5%, 10 years later, that $5,000 is worth $22,338. That's a $14,000 difference. $14,454 more money without making any additional contributions. This is what we're talking about when we talk about the power of compounding, in that you're letting the money work for you instead of you having to do all the work. It's a nice little extra way to earn money. Folks, we're up at our next break. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. I'll take questions live on air or off air. Give your question to Lori C. She'll write it down, bring it in the studio, 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk music offers a variegated pattern of performers and styles. I'm Tom Druckenmiller, your host for In the Tradition. Together, we'll trace the roots and branches of American folk music from the earliest recordings and performers through today's talented players. In the Tradition, Wednesday evening from 7 to 9 p.m. on WDIY 88.1 FM and WDIY.org. WDIY, Lehigh Valley's community NPR station.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions this evening, the phone number is 610-758-8810. We can talk live on air or off air. If you give your question to Lori C., she can bring it in, and I will do my best to answer it. That is 610-758-8810. Questions are also, you can also send questions into yourfinancialchoices.com, and I will follow up with an answer if I can. That's what I love to do. I love questions. That's how we learn. 610-758-8810. We are talking about misconceptions tonight, and you don't know what you don't know. I even do not know what I do not know. Something came up today, in fact, in the office, which was really interesting. It was quite a kind of a remote thing, but it was interesting. I love learning new things, but there was something that I had not known, and it was like, great. Don't even remember what it was anymore, but I'll remember if ever I ever have it again. So let's talk about another misconception. This I kind of put in the tax area. We have people who convert their IRA monies to Roth in some capacity. Maybe they do $5,000, $10,000. I've had someone do $900,000. So converting an IRA to a Roth. So let's pretend the IRA is worth whatever amount, and you decide to convert $25,000 of some, you know, let's pretend it's like a mutual fund value of $25,000, and you transfer it to a Roth, and that means you're going to pay taxes on $25,000. 6 months later, the market drops, and that $25,000 in essence is now only worth $18,000. And you think, shoot, had I known that, I wouldn't have converted it, because I converted and paid tax on 25. Now it's only worth 18. Gosh, shouldn't have done that. You might think it's too late, but it's not, because the IRS allows you to recharacterize or undo a rollover, a conversion. You can reverse it. And what's really cool is they give you a long time to do it. You have up until the due date of the tax return, and dot, 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 here's the part you might not know. The due date of the tax return, including extensions, even if you did not extend your tax return. Now, why on earth they wouldn't just say you have until the extension due date is beyond me, but it is the due date of the return, including the extension date, even if you did not extend. So this is really a powerful tool, because let's pretend you do it in January of 2017. You converted $25,000 and it dropped. You have until October 15th of 2018 to be able to change your mind. So that is something to really keep in mind. We have a caller on line one. We have Stacy in Allentown. Hi, Stacy.
Hi, how are you?
Good. How can I help you?
Okay, I am a young 47,
uh-huh.
and I recently got
that.
I make a decent salary, but haven't put anything away for retirement. I'm pretty healthy, so I tend on working.
Mm-hmm.
I like to keep busy, so I tend on working for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But my monthly living expenses are pretty low. They're only like $1,000 a month.
Mm-hmm.
I have a pretty decent amount left over,
mm-hmm.
At least like $2,500 that I could, you know, start doing something with.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Stacy. Well, depending on how much, first of all, do you have an employer plan through work?
There is one. I can set it up.
Okay.
I've been there a year, and they promoted me pretty decently.
Okay.
So.
Well, one of the first things we look at when someone's working and they have access to an employer plan, my first question would be, does the employer match or put money in themselves? So certain,
I believe they do.
Okay. Certain employer plans do it automatically and you don't have to. That's called the safe harbor plan. So
mm-hmm.
some employers will automatically put in 3%, but some employers will say, if you put in 6, we'll put in 3, or if you put in 6, we'll put in 6. So you want to
mm-hmm.
see what kind of matching you have or how that works, because that's the first place I would put money to get that free money from the employer. So that's kind of the first place I would look to see what kind of employer match you get. And if your cash flow allows for that, great. And then if you still have more cash flow, even after that, I would say, gosh, can I put some money in a Roth IRA? And if you're single, and don't tell me how much you're making or anything, but if you're single and your page one income is under $117,000, you could then put some of the extra money in a Roth IRA. And at your age, you can put in $5,500. And then the Roth IRA, you can invest it, and hopefully that will grow. And if you ever needed it, you could always tap the original contributions. But if you don't need it, you just let that ride. And if that grows and has earnings, and then when you retire, you ever need it, it's income tax free on any withdrawals. So I love Roth IRAs. So first you want the employer match, then you want maybe the Roth IRA. And then if you even have extra money after that, Stacy, you could open up a brokerage account, maybe do some investments. It depends on your risk tolerance. So this is all general information, but I'm just kind of frameworking this for you. You could invest outside of a retirement account. The beauty of that is when you're older and you retire, let's say you retire at 65, you actually have a lot of tax planning cash flow options then. You're not waiting for all your money to come from a retirement account, because usually when money comes out of retirement accounts, it's taxable, except for that Roth. So you're kind of what I like to think of it as, you're kind of diversifying your options in retirement. You're allocating your retirement strategies across different buckets that have different consequences. The retirement bucket maybe is getting a match and could grow faster, and you're getting tax deferral. The Roth is growing, hopefully for retirement tax-free. And then you could be putting money in your individual account and having that grow with some tax-favored investments that you could get. But you can always tap that during your working years if you need it. So you kind of spread that out, your options.
Now, with the Roth IRA, let's say put like $10,000 in there and just let that grow, or do I add to it monthly?
Well, you can do one time, and there's a cap on it. So the IRS rules might change every year. This year, for 2017, it's $5,500 for people under 50. Once you're 50, you can do a catch-up contribution of $1,000. And the IRS lets us wait until April 15th to do it for the prior year. So again, don't tell me how much you make, but But Stacey, remember I said if you make under 117 as a single person, you could put the money in the Roth. Maybe you're right on the cusp and you don't know. Well, the IRS says if you're not sure, you can wait and you have until April 15th to do it, and you can count it as a 2017 contribution. And when you go to do it, you tell the custodian, this is my 2017. So there's a cap on how much you can do. But then as long as you're within those income thresholds I mentioned, you can do that every year. As long as you have earned income and you're under those thresholds. So, and then you also want to check with your employer plan, you know, if you get a big raise, maybe you're only doing 10% a year. Well, you could do more. And the employer match, you do enough to get the employer match, but if you even have even more money, you could put even more in the retirement plan at work. So
that's what I was going to ask.
Yeah.
I'm sure they have a max, though, I would think.
Well, the max is $18,000 for someone under 50. That's the max.
$18,000 a year?
Yes, a year. A year. And generally, you do it through payroll deduction every month.
Right.
Okay?
Okay.
All right, Stacey,
thank you for your question.
Great question. Take care. Have a good night. Folks, we're at the halfway mark. We are going to take a break. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
DIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
This is WDIY. The time now is 6:31, and your current temperature is 66. Thursday, we're going to be partly sunny, high near 71. Thursday night, clear with a low around 47. Friday, sunny with a high near 72. Friday night, clear with a low around 45. And Saturday, sunny with a high near 72. And now back to your financial choices with Lori Siebert.
Thanks, Shandi. Folks, if you have questions, we're talking about misconceptions tonight. Question doesn't have to be about that, but we're talking about misconceptions. You don't know what you don't know. Phone number 610-758-8810, 610-758-8810. And I loved Stacy's call and her questions. And even though she's a little older, young, doing something now is still a good decision. So I don't like when people have regrets about things. Sometimes it freezes people. It overwhelms them. It's like, oh, I haven't done anything. It's just too much. No, you say, okay, now I'm in a position. I'm ready now. Let's go. Let's do it. Don't feel bad if you haven't, you know, saved before. If you've come to this conclusion and you're doing it now, it's so, so empowering. And what's really empowering is when you see that starting to make a difference, see that compounding that I mentioned. So even in Stacy's case, even if she did $5,000 a year, remember my example was $5,000 once. And in 4 years, it grew to, what did I say, like $33,000 or something. So can you imagine if you did it every year? And that was just a very small example. If someone has so much excess cash flow, you always also want to make sure you have an emergency reserve. So Stacy, if you're still listening, you do want to make sure you have like a 6-month emergency reserve. That should be the number one priority. Then do the employer plan, then the Roth IRA. And then if there's extra, you could do it outside the retirement account or even put more in the retirement account at work. But you definitely want to make sure you have an emergency reserve. You did mention low debt too. You know, let's not have any debt then. If you have extra cash, you could get rid of the debt. So we were talking about Roth IRAs. So with Stacy, I was talking about kind of what I call the regular Roth that you put in maybe $5,500 in. I've done other shows on Roth. There's so many different options now with the Roth 401k feature, with Roth conversion. So I was talking about Roth conversions and how you can reverse those. So keep that in mind. Yay, I love, we're having calls. We have Eugene in Bethlehem on line one. Eugene, can you hear me? Hi, how are you?
Very good. How about you?
Good. Thank you for calling. How can I help you?
Well, I'm listening to your talk about rolling over the Roth IRAs.
Uh-huh.
And what's the advantage if you have to pay the taxes now or pay them later?
Awesome question. Thank you. And I love that you're thinking ahead. Why would you do a IRA conversion to a Roth IRA if you have to pay the tax? Because, Eugene, there are certain, and so, again, the show is general information, and you do have to understand your own situation. But there could be a case to do the conversion. For example, if maybe this year I'm in a 0% tax bracket, or I'm in a 10% tax bracket, or a 15% tax bracket, and I expect in the future I'm going to be in a higher tax bracket. Or for example, sometimes when people retire, Eugene, the year of retirement, they might say, hey, I have a lot of cash on the side. I got this severance in December. And now in 2018, I'm not going to have my salary. I'm just going to live off that money in the bank. And all of a sudden, we're looking at a tax return with no wages on it. And they're 64 years old. They don't have a pension. And wow, what tax bracket are we going to be in? A zero. So maybe we would want to convert some IRA money to a Roth IRA and pay the tax today, play the tax brackets, because I know when I hit age 67, I'm going to have, and I'm making this up, I'm going to start taking money out of my 401k and I'm going to need $100,000. All of a sudden now, when I start taking that kind of money out of my IRA or my 401k and I have Social Security, maybe I have a pension, my tax rate might go up. So it makes sense if you're always in the same tax bracket, it's really might not make much difference. But if you're in a lower tax bracket when you convert than what you might be when you take the money out, it could be a good play. The other thing, Eugene, is that some people don't think about is that it's not just what tax bracket you're going to be in. If you're married, maybe you and your spouse are going to be in the 25% bracket forever. But when one spouse dies and there's a survivor, that survivor might end up getting thrown into a much higher tax bracket under the single rates. Or maybe you are in a lower tax bracket than your children who are going to inherit, and maybe you want to pay the income tax by doing the conversion, and your kids are going to be in a 35% bracket. So there's a number of different reasons why you would want to do it, but it always takes careful planning. And the other thing is, people don't have to convert their whole IRA. You can convert part of it. I've had people do $5,000 conversions, $10,000 conversions, and as I said, $900,000 conversions. So it kind of depends on your own situation. Does that make sense, Eugene?
Yes.
Okay, good. Thank you for your call. I appreciate it. Have a good evening. We have another caller, Shandi, on line 3. We have Heather. Heather, can you hear me?
Yes. Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
Great. Thank you. How can I help you?
Well, I enjoy listening to your show, so thank you.
Thank you.
My question is in regards to a traditional versus a Roth IRA.
Mm-hmm.
My employer in 2018 is going to start offering a Roth IRA, mm-hmm. as well as a 401k traditional.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of curious because I've always done the traditional.
Right.
I'm like, should I just stay there, or am I allowed to split 50-50?
Yes, yes, yes. That's a great question, and I love it. So what happened is traditionally Roths, we could only do kind of like an IRA. We put like $5,000. It used to be $2,000, $4,000. It kind of has gone up each year, but And some people couldn't put money into a Roth because there's income limitations. So certain people never had the option to go into a Roth. Then they started doing these conversions. But again, as Eugene and I just talked about, conversions, sometimes, you know, you have to pay the tax up front. Well, most recently, they added, employers had the ability to add a Roth feature to their 401k. So in my mind, to keep it straight, Heather, I say Roth 401k.
Okay.
Now what happens with the employer plans, the regular 401ks, let's just call that the 401k, that's all typically on a pre-tax basis. We put money into the plan. We don't have to pay our federal tax on that today. We do pay tax on it for Pennsylvania, by the way, but for federal, it's pre-tax. We get the benefit of deferral, of the tax deferral. So that's really good. We want to see if there's an employer match. That's great. But when they add the Roth feature, what that opened the door to a lot of people was the ability to put money into a Roth when they might not otherwise have been able to because of the income limitations. The only issue with that, and why you might want to think about whether it makes sense for you or not, is, and don't tell me what, how much you make. But a lot of times when someone's just starting off in their career or they're at a new job, they might be, you know, maybe making $25,000 or $30,000. And if you're in a low tax bracket and you have the Roth 401k feature, it's kind of nice because you can put money in the Roth. Now, you might say, but Lori, you told me I could put $5,500 into the Roth anyway. Well, you can have an individual Roth outside of your retirement plan, but all you can put in it is $5,500. The Roth feature in a 401k, you can put up to $18,000 in it. So that lets people get a lot of extra money into a Roth much quicker. Now, for some people, though, depending on their tax bracket, they might say, you know what, I like the idea of a Roth, but I like the idea of the pre-tax. And to your point then, Heather, you might say, well, why don't I put 5% in the Roth piece and 5% in the regular 401k, or you could do 2% and 2% or 10% and 2%. You know, you can mix it up any way you want, usually on the enrollment form. And
okay.
And you can, a lot of plans will allow you to change it like monthly or however often you need to. So I've have employees who might do it for 6 months one way and 6 months another way, or they say do my bonus or do my catch-up contribution. So a lot of times you can change it around. But if it makes sense and you might be in a lower tax bracket, then the Roth could be a nice little way to do it. Now, the benefit too, Heather, then, is when someone retires or if you change employers, when you change employers, you could roll your 401k over into an IRA. And if there's a Roth piece of it, you can roll the Roth piece of it into a Roth IRA. And then they will track what you put into it, your kind of, you know, your after-tax money. And once you roll it into a regular Roth IRA out of your 401k, you could tap that money if you needed to, as long as you're not tapping the earnings.
So can you still do an individual IRA with $5,500 in addition to the $18,000?
The individual Roth IRA you could do as long as you're under the income limitations for the Roth, the regular Roth. So the regular Roth, if you're married and you make under $184,000, you and your spouse could both do the Roth IRA as long as you had earnings of that amount. If you're single, it's under $117,000. And there's a phase out range. You know, you can go a little higher and there's a phase out. But if you're under those limits, you can do your regular 401k, whichever allocation you want, and you could do the Roth IRA.
Okay, that sounds good.
Yeah.
They were saying something about when you get older, you may predict that you will be in a different tax bracket, higher or lower.
Right.
Honestly, I have no clue what I'm going to be in, but if you have the benefit of both, one that's already the taxes are paid,
mm-hmm.
it gives, to me, that's maybe a little peace of mind.
Right, like a little hedging. Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit. Trying to, I don't know, 50-50, 60-40, whatever it's
right,
going to be.
Right, right, right.
Okay.
I like that. I like that, too.
I just
too.
Wasn't sure if it was going to be crazy to split them or...
Yeah, yeah, you could try it. And I love if you have the... cash flow to be able to put money into those retirement accounts, that's awesome because it's just so empowering to see those retirement accounts build up. And back, and I don't know if you heard at the beginning of the show, we're talking about compounding. You're having that money work for you. So
I love it. Thank
yeah.
you so much.
Good job. Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thanks. I love these questions tonight. I'm telling you, the WDIY listeners are really informed listeners, and unlike other radio stations that have talk shows that call in, I'm very impressed. So thank you, listeners. Great calls tonight. And if we do conversions of IRAs to Roth IRAs, again, I just want to reiterate that you have up until the extension due date to change your mind on that. There is a little bit of a waiting period if you do recharacterize or reverse that conversion. When we're talking about conversions, you do have to wait a little bit. Let me see what this says. This is from the IRS website, irs.gov. If you recharacterize all or a part of a rollover or conversion to a Roth IRA, you cannot reconvert the amount recharacterized to the same or another Roth IRA until the latter of later of 30 days after the recharacterization of the year following the year. So what that is trying to say is if I change my mind and I do it October 15th of 2018, I change my mind about my January 2nd Roth conversion of 2017. I change my mind on October 14th and I, you know, reverse it. They're not going to let you then convert that same money the next day. All right. They just want you to wait a little bit. So it's not a big deal. The later of 30 days after the recharacterization or the year following the year of the rollover or conversion. All right. We are talking about misconceptions. You don't know what you don't know. And if you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. 610-758-8810. We'll be back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
In 2017, WDIY is celebrating 22 years on the air. If you listen to WDIY, support the station by becoming a member today. Members are our most reliable source of support. We couldn't be here without you. To become a member, visit wdiy.org or call 610-694-8100. WDIY, serving the Lehigh Valley and beyond.
Welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. You're listening to Your Financial Choices. If you have questions, phone number is 610-758-8810. And questions can also be submitted through the website, yourfinancialchoices.com. A few more misconceptions, and I have about 14 minutes left, so I'm going to try to really run down these pretty quick. I like to generally kind of give a narrative around some of what we're discussing so you can have context, but I do want to get out some misconceptions here. So tax. When I get a notice from the IRS saying I owe, I have to pay it or face penalties. So the misconception, when I get a notice from the IRS saying I owe, I have to pay it or face penalties. Well, the reason I say that's a misconception is because sometimes the IRS isn't right. And I can't tell you how many times I've had clients who tell me they get a notice, and I try to train everybody, that they get a notice and, oh my gosh, they're so worried and scared, and should I write the check, they say. And I say, no, don't write the check. Let me look at the notice. We got to see what it says. Because sometimes the IRS is wrong. So, for example, I had one client who got a notice one time. It said they owed all this money. And what the IRS had said is that they hadn't made one of their estimated tax payments. And I had the client go back and check their estimated payments and look at their checking account. And yes, indeed, their checks had cleared. Well, we got copies of the checks, the endorsed checks, showing right at the back that the IRS, you know, had received the checks. And then we submit that. And then the IRS corrects their records. So don't make assumptions about that. And Lori C. had reminded me that about scams then. You want to be careful of scams with the IRS. I think Lori had recommended that. You got to be careful of scams. So I want a public service announcement here. Just be very careful, especially as we're coming up at the end of the year and tax time. The IRS will not call you, and they are getting more sophisticated in how they're on how folks are scamming people. So be careful of emails. That's called phishing, where they send you an email saying something. They're trying to get you to link to something. Please be very, very careful. The IRS is not calling you. They're not threatening you, and they're not telling you to put money on a debit card to pay them. You would not believe how many people get confused by that. So please try to be skeptical when something just seems fishy. Trust your instincts. And in fact, I was in CVS the other day, and when I went to use my credit card, they actually had a big warning on the screen that said about phishing and a scam, and be careful, and did someone ask you to put money on a debit card? And the sales clerk told me that she almost had to you know, yell at a person who was so scared and trying to put money on a debit card for this very situation. She's like, no, they're scamming you. They're scamming you. The woman's like, no, no, I'm afraid I owe the IRS. And she's like, no, no. It took a while for them to convince this person that they didn't. But one of the scams, how they've heightened it, I believe these perpetrators, is by targeting people who may be new to the country or immigrants and have language barriers. So if you have friends who fit that criteria, please warn them of this and be very, very careful. Investments. I hear people sometimes say, oh, the market goes down, my portfolio goes down. You know, oh, the market was down 20%, my portfolio is down 20%. You know, folks, it doesn't really always work like that. It depends on how you're invested. So just keep in mind that you should be educated on what you have and how you're invested. But the market, when we talk about the market, typically they're talking about the S&P or the Dow, and that is like a particular group of stocks. And that's just kind of an indicator of how the overall market is doing. It doesn't mean it's matching your particular performance. You might have other kinds of investments in there that aren't in that S&P list or that Dow list. So you don't, it doesn't always mean that. And then the other thing is, I sometimes hear people say, oh, I lost money and I never recovered. Well, sometimes people are talking about a particular point, a point in the market. And let's pretend you invested $10,000 and in 5 years, the market goes up and your account was worth $20,000 and then it drops and now it's worth $18,000. And you say, oh, I lost $2,000 in the market. Well, first of all, if you didn't sell, you didn't lose. But it's also what points people tend to focus on. In this example, someone invested $10,000 and in 5 years it was still worth $18,000. So guess what? They still have a gain, folks. But people kind of tend to focus on where they were when it was the top. And it's like, oh, got to $20,000. We're so excited. And then it drops to $18,000 and they say, oh, I lost $2,000. Well, you didn't really lose $2,000 because you didn't, you know, realize the gain and you didn't realize the loss. And if you sold today at 18, you're thinking you lost two, but in fact, you invested 10, it's worth 18, you have an $8,000 gain. So be careful about your assumptions that you're using when you're talking about your portfolio and how it did. Be careful. Risk management, insurance. Sometimes people think if they have a sinkhole, something really tragic, that it's going to be covered on their homeowner's insurance. Not the case. That is a special provision. You have to have sinkhole coverage to cover a sinkhole. So I'm just giving you an example of when you're talking about insurance, you better make sure, not make assumptions, misconceptions about what your homeowners is covering. Make sure you understand. And you can say to your insurance provider, are there any circumstances for the area that I'm living in that I might have to be careful of when I'm insuring my house? What if I have a septic tank? What if I'm in a flood zone? You need to talk that through with your insurance agent or know what you have to pay attention to for your area. And a lot of times the insurance agents will know that and they'll know the area. Life insurance. A lot of people will be offered group term life insurance through work. And they think, great, I've got life insurance, I'm set. That's great up until about the time you lose your job or you change jobs, because that group insurance may not go with you. And what might be offered to you is the opportunity to continue it after you've had a medical exam. Guess what happens then? Did you leave work because you weren't well? Did you have to quit your job because something happened health-wise? You want to be careful. It's good to have, of course, group term life insurance through work. But if you're in a position where you maybe have a mortgage, you have children or a significant other or a spouse who relies on your income, you might want to make sure or think about having term insurance or some type of life insurance outside of work, because it may be more difficult for you to get a policy if anything should happen with your employment. So you might want to you know, review that as well. So those are some of the kind of misconceptions. People might think that they have life insurance and they say I have life insurance, but they don't realize it's life insurance through work and it may go away if their job goes away. Retirement, maxing your 401k. Earlier, we talked to, I think, Stacy about the maximum amount you could put in a 401k or one of the callers. $18,000 in 2017. If you're over 50, they allow a catch-up contribution of $6,000, so you can get it up to $24,000. The misconception is sometimes people think if they say, oh, you know, if I'm making $240,000, 10%, $24,000, great, I'm going to max out my plan. But they don't realize if they're over 50, it might require an extra election on the enrollment form. They might have to make a separate election for the catch-up contribution. So be careful of that. Estate planning. Remember, this is where I found most of the misconceptions were. A surviving spouse inherits everything. So a lot of spouses think, oh, my spouse is going to get everything. Not the case, folks. It depends on the titling of your assets and your beneficiary designations. If you own accounts alone, not with your spouse, it doesn't mean they're getting your account. All right. So, it depends on what your will says. If you don't have a will, this is the misconception. People think they don't have to maybe have a will because they have everything going to their spouse. There's intestate rules in Pennsylvania. If you don't have a will and you had an account in your name alone, depending on how much it is and what kind of expenses or debts you might have had, it doesn't mean all of the funds are going to be going to your spouse. So, be careful of that. It's not the case. Intestate rules do not have everything going to spouse. If there's children or parents, some of those monies might end up going to them. There's something called step up in basis. A lot of people think, oh, I'm going to get a step up in basis on all the assets I inherit, and that'll be good for me for income tax. A step up in basis is if I owned a piece, a stock, let's say, and I paid $10,000 for it, and it's worth $100,000 today, and I sold it, I would have a $90,000 gain. If I die, and it's worth $90,000, the cost basis is now $90,000, and then my heirs inherit it. They paid $90,000, they got $90,000. That is zero cost, zero gain. So, but not everything gets a step up in basis. The annuities don't get a step up in basis. IRAs don't get a step up in basis. So don't make any assumptions about what gets a step up in basis or not. You got to be careful. We had an off-air call, Jane from Allentown, and she said group life insurance. Should she get additional policy through work if work offers it? Well, an additional policy through work, I think what the work policies sometimes let you do is they might let you buy a higher amount. They might let you buy, you know, two times your salary or something like that. So, Jane, no, I probably wouldn't go look for one through work. I might look for one that I could buy an individual policy outside of work. What I do mention to people is if you're involved in any professional organization, sometimes those professional organizations will offer a group policy. The reason the group policies are nice is because a lot of times you don't have to go through a medical review. Organizations like AAA have group policies for their members. So Financial Planning Association, certain professional organizations that you may have affiliation with might allow you to go into a group policy. So great question, and keep that up. There's lots of other misconceptions, folks. I only have a couple minutes left. I just want to mention the number one misconception, and that is we have plenty of time. We don't have plenty of time, folks. I think I've demonstrated tonight that many of the misconceptions we have lead us to wait or not plan properly. And what we learn is that the sooner we try to tackle something, the more time we have to do the proper planning, which will benefit us and benefit our heirs as well. So just as I one of our callers said tonight, they're 47, really hadn't started saving. But you know what? And she might be thinking, gosh, I should have done this sooner. At least you're doing something now. number one, most important, you're doing something now. That's the big takeaway tonight. Do something now. Be a person of action. It's so empowering. You feel so good when you do it. Now, I do want to caution people. Say, oh, yeah, finally I'm going to invest. They invest and the market goes down and it's like, ah. So you want to make sure you have your emergency reserve so that you can weather those up and downs of the market and understand your own risk tolerance and that kind of thing. But folks, plan today. Do it today. Get it started. Simple steps, break it down, compartmentalize, do what you have to do to take those initial steps. The first step, do a little inventory for yourself of what you have. Thank you for all the calls tonight. Absolutely love them. Favorite part of the show when people call in. Next week, we have guest attorneys Alan Tuller and Constance Nelson from Gross McGinley, and we are going to talk about the four hot topics in domestic law. That could be divorce and, you know, child support, things like that. Coming up next, we have In the Tradition folk music. We want you to remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive. Make the best of your financial choices. Thank you, Shandi. Thank you, Lori. Thank you, callers. Have a great week, folks.